We're going to finish up tonight talking about national church establishments. The last thing I want to talk about is probably, possibly the most controversial, and that's the magistrate's power in taxation. It's a topic that is not popular. People don't like to think about it. But I think we do need to think about it, because we have to think about, and I've already indicated in the last few weeks, some of the things that would lie behind this. There's very strong resistance to any kind of compulsion in religion in this country and among modern Christians. I've already talked about that a little bit. The magistrate does have a right to compel you to attend. They can't make you believe, but they can make you attend. They have a right and an obligation to see that people attend, and that they have a place to attend, that they have a ministry to attend. Now, I don't want to get into the entire doctrine of magistracy. Romans 13 has a lot to say about the doctrine of the magistrate. Among other things, it says, for this cause pay you tribute also, for they are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. So what does Paul say? Paul says, among other things, that in fact the magistrate has a right to collect tribute. When we're talking about a lawful magistrate, the lawful magistrate has, in fact, in his power, a legitimate power, and Paul recognizes this, to collect tribute. And why do they have this power? Why does Paul say they have this power? Well, because they're God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. He sees the hand of the magistrate involved with, in fact, this collection of tribute. The word, in fact, that's used here for tribute is phoros. It's a word that's used in the Septuagint. It's going to come up in a moment, and we're going to see the significance of this word, but it's not necessarily a word with a pleasant connotation. And, in fact, we will see that the word itself does not admit of voluntarism. It is not going to allow us to construe it that way. Now again, I want to be very clear that the magistrate that has this right and an obligation is that magistrate which is of God. That is a legitimate magistrate exercising his just powers in defense of the true religion. We're not talking about the kind of magistracy that you see scattered throughout the modern world, devoid of any religious conscience. We're talking about magistrates who are, in fact, God's ministers, deacons of God, ministering in the things of God. So the question then that we want to address is this: what were the taxes in Israel? And how were they distributed? And by how were they distributed, I don't mean to whom were they distributed. We've already talked about the to whom. These taxes are being collected to be distributed for the upkeep of the true religion, for the care of widows and orphans, for the care of the sick, for the care of the poor, for the care of all of those functions over which God has set his church. We understand that the church is going to make a lot of these distributions. But the question is, how does the revenue stream come to the church? Is it by voluntary contribution on the part of the people? Or is there, in fact, a compulsion added by reason of the magistrate making a collection on behalf of the church. Well, the first thing then we need to consider is the national establishment in Israel. We have to bear in mind the temple, though it was under the spiritual jurisdiction of priests, we're not denying that. Look at Joel 1, 9 and 2, 17.
Joel 1, verse 9. The meat offering and the drink offering is cut off from the house of the Lord. The priests, the Lord's ministers, mourn.
Joel 2, verse 17. Let the priests, the ministers of the Lord, weep between the porch and the altar, and let them say, spare thy people, O Lord, and give not thine heritage to reproach, that the heathen should rule over them. Wherefore should they say among the people, where is their God?
Clearly, the priests, the Levites, a number of the Levites anyway, have spiritual jurisdiction. They are ministers of the Lord over the Lord's house. We're not denying a separate, distinct spiritual jurisdiction. Nonetheless, when we talk about the temple, it was a state sanctuary. It was the representation of that national establishment of religion, and it was, in fact, built and maintained by the king. We know this by looking at Ezekiel 45, verses 13 to 17. In the divisions of the land, we're told in Ezekiel 45 that these sacrifices, these oblations, these are in fact tithes, these are different temple requirements. They're given to the prince, who then gives it to the priest to do his job. The word for prince there is clearly a word which means a civil officer. It's not some kind of a term that could be applied to an ecclesiastical officer. There is a collection going on. It's being given to the prince. The prince is turning it over to the priest for the maintenance of the temple and its service. In fact, we know this about this temple and the treasuries used. The king felt free to withdraw monies from these treasuries of both the palace and the temple. Look at 1 Kings 15:18.
And Asa took all the silver and the gold that were left in the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king's house, and delivered them into the hand of his servants. And King Asa sent them to Ben-Hadad, the son of Tabrimon, son of Hazion, king of Syria, that dwelt at Damascus, saying,
the king had no problem reaching in and accessing that money. Why? Because the king is the one who is, in fact, charged with the collection of that money. Now, very often he authorizes the priest to make collection of temple offerings. Look at 2 Kings 12, 4-16. and 2 Kings 22:3-7.
2 Kings 12. And Jehoash said to the priests, all the money of the dedicated things that is brought unto the house of the Lord, even the money of every one that passeth the account, the money that every man is set at, and all the money that cometh into any man's heart to bring it to the house of the Lord, let the priest take it to them, every man of his acquaintance, and let them repair the breaches of the house, wheresoever any breach shall be found. But it was so that in the 23rd year of King Jehoash, the priests had not repaired the breaches of the house. Then King Jehoash called Jehoiada the priest and the other priests and said unto them, why repair ye not the breaches of the house? Now therefore receive no more money of your acquaintance, but deliver it for the breaches of the house. And the priest consented to receive no more money of the people, neither to repair the breaches, neither to repair the breaches of the house. But Jehoiada the priest took a chest and bored a hole in the lid of it, and set it beside the altar on the right side as one cometh into the house of the Lord. And the priest that kept the door put therein all the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. And it was so, when they saw that there was much money in the chest, that the king's scribe and the high priest came up, and they put up in bags, and told the money that was found in the house of the Lord. And they gave the money, being told, into the hands of them that did the work, that had oversight of the house of the Lord. They laid it out to the carpenters and builders that wrought upon the house of the Lord, and to masons and hewers of stone, and to buy timber and hewed stone to repair the breaches of the house of the Lord, and for all that was laid out for the house to repair it. Howbeit, they were not made for the house of the Lord bowls of silver, snuffers, basins, trumpets, any vessels of gold or vessels of silver of the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. But they gave that to the workmen and repaired therewith the house of the Lord. Moreover, they reckoned not with the men into whose hand they delivered the money to be bestowed on workmen, for they dealt faithfully. The trespass money and sin money was not brought into the house of the Lord, it was the priests.
2 Kings 22:3-7. And it came to pass in the 18th year of King Josiah that the king sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, the son of Meshulam, the scribe, to the house of the Lord, saying, go up to Hilkiah, the high priest. And then he made some of the silver which is brought into the house of the Lord, which the keepers of the door have gathered of the people, and let them deliver it into the hand of the doers of the work that have the oversight of the house of the Lord, and let them give it to the doers of the work which is in the house of the Lord to repair the breaches of the house, unto carpenters and builders and masons, and to buy timber and hewn stone to repair the house. Howbeit, there is no reckoning made with them of money that was delivered into their hand, because they dealt faithfully.
If we look at these two examples, and the reason for choosing these two examples with what I have in mind to discuss, is that the first example, Jehoash, we're told explicitly that as long as Jehoiada the priest was alive, he did that which was good in the sight of the Lord. In the second case, we're talking about good King Josiah. These are godly actions by kings who are in fact under godly influence. These are not the actions of tyrants. These are not the actions of people who have taken to themselves too much power. And yet we are told the king had the right both to authorize and to unauthorize the priest's collection of money. They oversee, in fact, the transfer of funds to the priests, and they even dictate to them certain terms for the use of the money. That is, they need to use these monies for the purpose of fixing the temple. Now, a right to authorize, coupled with a right to suspend the right to collect, indicate that the magistrate, in fact, is the one who possesses the power of compulsion with respect to the collection of monies, tax monies. And that for the purpose of the maintenance of the true religion in Israel. Now we want to look at some of these taxes over which they claimed a right. Taxes took several forms. The first form we want to look at, and I think in some respects this is the most important form to keep in mind first before we talk about any others, is that there was in fact the utilization of forced labor, which appears first under Joshua. If we look at Joshua 17 verse 13.
Joshua 17 verse 13. Yet it came to pass when the children of Israel were waxing strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out.
They put the Canaanites to tribute. And the word there is a word we're going to come up against here again and again. And the word is mas. Although it appears under Joshua, the fact is it was probably institutionalized under the reign of David, as we find amongst his officials one named Adoram, who was set over the tribute, or as the word means, over the forced labor, al Hamas. Look at 2 Samuel 20, verse 20.
Samuel 20, verse 24. And Adoram was over the tributes, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder.
Adoram was over the tribute, or over the forced labor. Ha mas. Mas is the word, in fact, used in modern Hebrew for tax. The tribute is mas. It's rooted in forced labor. Now, literally, in this case, it probably was forced labor. It is a form of taxation. The Greek word in the Septuagint is phoros. That's the word that Paul uses in Romans 13. For this cause, pay ye tribute also. Phoros, tribute. If that were in Hebrew, the word would be mas. Forced labor. See that? A godly magistrate has a right to tribute in order to be God's minister. Paul says so. Right, this form of taxation was used under Solomon in 1 Kings 4, verse 6.
1 Kings 4, 6. And Ahishar was over the household, and Adoniram, the son of Abdah, was over the tribute.
Again, under Solomon, he has an official, just like David did, an official who's over the tribute, over the mas, ha-mas, the tribute. That is the forced labor, slave labor. David and Solomon had, in fact, officials who were set over the forced labor. Now, if we look and see why, under Solomon, these men, the forced labor, were sent monthly to Lebanon. We look at 1 Kings 5:13 and 14. And in the Hebrew, the Masoretic text is verses 27 and 28. But in the English, it's 1 Kings 13 and 14.
1 Kings 5, verses 13 and 14. And King Solomon raised a levy out of all Israel, and the levy was 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month by horses a month. They were in Lebanon and 2 months at home, and Adoniram was over the levy.
Again, we're told that there's an official over the levy. The levy is, in fact, the forced labor. They are sent monthly to Lebanon. What are they doing in Lebanon? Well, in fact, we know from elsewhere that they are collecting materials and bringing them back to build the temple. Now, forced labor, slave labor, word that Paul uses, if we were to compare it with the Septuagint, That doesn't sound voluntary. We understand that under the gospel, my people will be made willing in the day of my power. But you know, the compulsion goes away when you're converted. That is, when you delight to have the magistrate building the kingdom of God, supplying this, it doesn't feel like compulsion. It only feels like compulsion if you're an enemy of God. People who complain about this idea and find it compulsive are complaining because they're enemies of God. How do we know this? Well, this levy was not made upon the Israelites, but only upon strangers dwelling in the land. Look at 1 Kings 9, 20 to 22.
And the people were left that were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, which were not of the children of Israel, their children that were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel also were not able to utterly destroy, upon those did Solomon levy a tribute of bond service unto this day. For the children of Israel did Solomon make no bondmen, but they were men of war, and his servants, and his princes, and his captains, and rulers of his chariots, and his horsemen.
If there's any doubt, if you don't know Hebrew, if you didn't know Hebrew, if there was any doubt as to what was going on, in 1 Kings 9, 20 to 22, we're told specifically this levy was a levy of bondmen. It's forced labor. And in fact, the tax revolt that we read about under Rehoboam, against Rehoboam, was occasioned by his decision not only to continue this forced labor, but to increase this use of forced labor. Look at 1 Kings 12, 4 to 19.
1 Kings 12, verses 4 to 19. Thy father made our yoke grievous. Therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father, and his heavy yoke which he put upon us, and we will serve thee. And he said unto them, Depart yet for 3 days, then come again to me. And then he will depart. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon, his father, while he yet lived, and said, How do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, If thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men, which they had given him, and insulted with the young men that were grown up with him, and which stood before him. And he said unto them, What counsel give ye that we may answer these people, who have spoken to me, saying, Make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter? The young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, Thus shalt thou speak unto this people, that spake unto thee, saying, Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father did lead you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had appointed, saying, Come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him, and spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, My father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke, but my father also chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying which the Lord spake by Ahijah and Shilonite and Jeroboam the son of Nebat. So when all Israel saw that the king hearkened not unto them, the people answered the king, saying, What portion is we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, though Israel, now see to thine own house, David. So Israel departed unto their tents. But as for the children of Israel, which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the tribute, and all Israel stoned him with stones, that he died. Therefore King Rehoboam made speed to get him up to his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day.
What is it they're rebelling against? Well, he sends Adoram down after he's told him, I'm going to increase this. Jeroboam already has it figured out. He's going to allow these strangers to live in the land and perform less forced labor to live. They side with him. The rebellion is over when they take out the official who's over this tribute. The northern kingdom is severed away. But it was over the use of forced labor. All that Jeroboam is promising is less forced labor than Rehoboam. And Rehoboam made it very easy. He decided to increase it. You know, the monthly runs to Lebanon meant that a certain portion of people were put out into forced labor 1 month out of the year. They were divided up that way. 11 months out of the year, the stranger in the land had his run of the mill. 1 month out of the year, he was forced to labor for the king. He wasn't a citizen. That's not a voluntary tax, other than you could vote with your feet and leave. You didn't have to be a citizen, or you didn't have to be a stranger in the land of Israel. But if you were going to be there, the tax was compulsive. It was not voluntary. It's only voluntary if you do it willingly. Second, it's clear that Israel's kings were large landholders who increased their personal fortunes during their reigns, such as David's taking spoils of war, as we see in 1 Samuel 30, verse 20.
1 Samuel 30, verse 20. And David took all the flocks and the herds which they drave before those other cattle and said, this is David's spoil.
David, like every good king, took the part of the spoil of war he wanted to increase his goods. But is this the only way the king increased his goods? No. If there existed a royal taxation system presided over by 12 officers, they're called governors or prefects, Nitzavim, prefects. These are, again, civil officers, each of whom was to provide supplies for the king and his house 1 month of the year, 1 Kings 4, 7 to 19.
First Kings 4, verses 7 through 19. And Solomon had 12 officers over all Israel, which provided victuals for the king and his household. Each man his month in a year made provision. And these are their names. The son of Hur, Mount Ephraim. The son of Dikar, in Machaz. And in Jealbim, and Beth Shemesh, and Elon Beth Hannah. The son of Hesed, in Arabeth. To him pertained Sucha, and all the land of Hefer, the son of Abinadab, in all the region of Dor, which had Tapheth, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. Baana, the son of Ahilud, to him pertained Tanakh, and Megiddo, and all Beth Shean, which is by Zartana, beneath Jezreel, from Beth Shean to Abel Meholah, even unto the place that is beyond Jokneam, the son of Geber and Ramoth Gilead. To him pertain the towns of Jair, the son of Manasseh, which are in Gilead. To him also pertain the region of Argob, which is in Bashan, 80 great cities with walls of brazen bars. Ahinadab, the son of Iddo, had Ahimaaz was in Naphtali. He also took Basmath, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. Baana, the son of Hushai, was in Asher and in Aleph. Jehoshaphat, the son of Peruah, in Issachar. Shimei, the son of Elah, in Benjamin. Geber, the son of Uri, was in the country of Gilead. In the country of Sion, king of the Amorites, and Og, king of Bashan. And he was the only officer which was in the land.
These officers are placed strategically within each one of the tribes except Judah. The reason being, remember, Ephraim and Manasseh are split up. They're scattered all over. They're in all of these regions. They are prefects. They're governors. And they're governors who are, in fact, set over a regional or provincial taxing system. Each one of them is responsible to care for the king and his house 1 month out of the year. Now, if you're a citizen, if you're a member of one of these tribes, this is not voluntary unless you're willing. If you're willing, all things are voluntary. If you're unwilling, the only way to get out of paying this is to relinquish your citizenship, in which case you then revert to being a stranger in the land if you remain there, and you get to help pay 1 month with forced labor. These are not what we would call voluntary contributions in the sense of passing around a plate in a meeting house somewhere, or even leaving a box at a door. These are monies which are being extracted from people by threat of compulsion. The third type of tax, there were several accounts of taxes which were raised for the payment of tribute when exacted by an enemy, such as that upon the wealthy, 2 Kings 15, 19 and 20.
2 Kings 15, verses 19 and 20. And Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hand might be with him, to confirm the kingdom in his hand. And Menahem exacted the money of Israel, even of all the mighty men of wealth, of each man 50 shekels of silver, to give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and stayed not there in the land.
You see as well, that which was paid in proportion to wealth or valuation of property. 2 Kings 23, 33 to 35.
2 Kings
the case of Pul, in the case of Pharaoh Necho, when these enemies of God's people come in, the magistrate taxes the wealthy in one case, we're told. In another case, he taxes people according to what they can pay in order to pay off the enemy. It's a tax. This, again, is not voluntary. It is a matter of compulsion, and standing behind it is not merely the threat of your own civil government, but that government is standing between you and another government, which is going to take even more if you don't give that up. These are not voluntary contributions. This is why voluntarism is just simply out of the picture. It does not figure in to the biblical picture at all. Fourth, there was a head or poll tax exacted according to census and to be used for the temple service. We read about Exodus 30, verses 11 to 16.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, When thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, then shall they give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord, when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them. This they shall give every one that passeth among them that are numbered, half a shekel after the shekel of the sanctuary. A shekel is 20 gerahs. A half shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. Every one that passeth among them that are numbered from 20 years old and above shall give an offering unto the Lord. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel, when they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for your souls. And thou shalt take the atonement money of the children of Israel, and shall appoint it for the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before the Lord to make an atonement for your souls.
This is a tax which is exacted equally upon everyone who falls within the parameters of the census. In a certain age group, it didn't matter whether you're rich or poor. Everyone needed atonement, and this has to do with the sacrifice. We see as well this tax appearing as an annual assessment, which continued at the time of the rebuilding of the temple in Nehemiah's day. We get Nehemiah 10, 32 to 39.
Also, we made ordinances for us to charge ourselves yearly with a third part of a shekel for the service of the house of our God, for the showbread and for the continual meat offering and for the continual burnt offering of the Sabbaths, of the new moons, for the set feasts and for the holy things and for the sin offerings to make an atonement for Israel, and for all the work of the house of our God. And we cast the lots among the priests, the Levites, and the people, for the wood offering, to bring it into the house of our God after the houses of our fathers, at times appointed year by year, to burn upon the altar of the Lord our God, as it is written in the law. And to bring the first fruits of our ground, and the first fruits of all fruit of all trees, year by year, unto the house of the Lord. Also the firstborn of our sons, and of our cattle, as it is written in the law, and the first fruits of our herds and of our flocks, to bring to the house of our God, and to the priests that minister in the house of our God. And that we should bring the first fruits of our dough, and our offerings, and the fruit of all manner of trees, of wine, and of oil, unto the priests, to the chambers of the house of our God, and the tithes of our ground, that the Levites, that the same Levites, might have the tithes in all the cities of our tillage. And the priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites take tithes, and the Levites shall bring up the tithes unto the house of our God, to the chambers and to the treasure house. For the children of Israel and the children of Levi shall bring the offering of the corn and the new wine and of the oil unto the chambers, where are the vessels of the sanctuary, and the priests that minister, and the porters and the singers, and we will not forsake the house of our God.
So all of the offerings and tithes and so on that we're going to talk about in a moment, they're all there along with this head tax or poll tax, which appears to be an annual assessment. Day of Atonement comes once a year. It's related to, in some sense, to this temple service. Everyone is subject to it. And in fact, it is still in effect being collected in Jesus' day. It's what's referred to in Matthew 17, 24 to 27.
Matthew 17, verses 24 through 27. When they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, "Doth not your master pay tribute?" And he said, "Yes." When he was coming to the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, "What thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute, of their own children or of strangers?" Peter saith unto him, "Of strangers." Jesus saith unto him, "Then are the children free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea and cast some hook, and take up the fish that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money, that take and give unto them for me and thee."
The words that he uses here, tele and kinson, for the tribute or the tax, are different from phoros, the word that Paul uses in Romans 13. It's referring to primarily the references to this temple tax, this poll tax. But then Jesus refers it back to, in fact, in the back of his mind, behind all of it, is that all of this tribute. And what he's saying is, in paying this, he wanted to be clear that he's not denying that he's the Son of God, or, in fact, that we become the sons of God through faith in him. He's doing it lest he should offend during the days of his flesh. This tax is still being assessed during the New Testament era. If you didn't pay, you were considered a non-practicing Jew. You were not an observant Jew. It wasn't voluntary in that sense. It may not have had all of the compulsion when they had a civil magistrate to back it up, but it still bore the compulsion of that necessity of upholding that temple worship. It still, in all likelihood, bore the compulsion of the governor, as it had back in Nehemiah's day, even when they no longer had full sovereignty. They still did have some sovereignty in Jesus' day over their territory. They were allowed to have certain amounts of civil jurisdiction. Any way you look at it, all I'm saying is it's not, for any observant Jew, this is not an optional thing. Right, fifth, there's a sabbatical year which resulted in loss of revenues of the land every seventh year. We read about in Leviticus 25, 2 to 7.
But in the seventh year shall be a Sabbath of rest unto the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. Thou shalt neither sow thy field nor prune thy vineyard. That which groweth of its own accord of thy harvest thou shalt not reap, neither gather the grapes of thy vine undressed, for it is a year of rest unto the land. And the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, for thee and for thy servant and for thy maid and for thy hired servant and for thy stranger that sojourneth with thee. And for thy cattle and for the beasts that are in thy land shall all the increase thereof be meat.
So every seventh year there's a sabbatical year, which means seventh year, the 14th year, 21st year, 28th year. When you get to the 49th year, what happens? You have a sabbatical year, and then it's followed by, that's right, the 50th year is a jubilee, and that's a greater loss of revenue, Leviticus 25, 8 to 17, and 23 to 25.
25, verses 8 through 17. Thou shalt number 7 Sabbaths of years unto thee, 7 times 7 years. In the space of the 7 Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month in the year of the, or in the day of atonement, shall you make the trumpet sound throughout all your land. And you shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a Jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family. A Jubilee shall that 50th year be unto you. Ye shall not sow, neither reap that which groweth of itself in it, nor gather the grapes in it of thy vine undressed, for it is the Jubilee. It shall be holy unto you. Ye shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. In the year of this Jubilee you shall return every man unto his possession. And if thou sell aught unto thy neighbor, or buyest aught of thy neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, thou shalt buy of thy neighbor, and according unto the number of years of the fruit he shall sell unto thee. According to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of years of the fruit doth he sell unto thee. Ye shall not therefore oppress one another, but thou shalt fear thy God, for I am the Lord your God. Verses 23 through 25. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine. For ye are strangers and sojourners with me, and in all the land of your possession ye shall grant a redemption for the land. If thy brother be waxen poor, and hath sold away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then shall he redeem that which his brother sold.
What does all of this mean? Well, again, if we're looking at the issue of compulsion, this is not optional. You can't be an Israelite. You can't even be in the land and not abide by this law. This is a law which is going to mean loss of revenue every 7 years, and then every 50th year you get an extra revenue hit. Those are taxes. It's part of the cost of living in Israel. It may not go directly for the maintenance of the temple, but it is going as part of the upholding of that cultus, that system of worship that's established in Israel. And it's mandatory on everyone. Six, there were gleaning rights reserved for the provision of the poor and resident foreigner. Look at Leviticus 19, 9, 10, and Leviticus 23, 22.
Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. When you reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. And thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the foreign stranger. I am the Lord your God.
Leviticus
23:22. When ye reap the harvest of
God.
Which are added gleaning rights for the orphan and the widow as well. If we look at Deuteronomy 24, 19 to 22.
Deuteronomy 24, verse 19 to 22. But thou cuttest thine harvest in thy field, and hast forgot a sheep in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hands. When thou beatest thine olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs of it. Bow again. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When thou gatherest the grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command thee to do this thing.
Okay, it's prohibited by the laws of gleaning to take every nickel of revenue out of your land. You're not allowed to do it. That's a tax. It's mandatory. You couldn't use modern farming equipment to do your farming in Israel. You have to leave behind something for the poor, for the orphans, for the widows, for the resident foreigners who can't own land. You have to allow them the ability to survive. It's mandatory. These kinds of laws in Israel are not being enforced by the priests. They're being enforced by the judges. If you violate these things, you go before a judge, a civil judge. These are taxes. And they're being enforced, ultimately, by a civil magistrate. We don't have a lot of cases in the Bible because the fact is observant Jews would follow the law. What seems like compulsion to people who are unwilling just simply becomes another good deed befitting true religion for those who are in fact believers. All right, seventh. There were first fruits and offerings, an imposed duty to contribute, whereby the priests found support. Deuteronomy 18, 1-8.
The priests, the Levites, and all the tribe of Levi shall have no part nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire and his inheritance. Therefore shall they have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance, as he hath said unto them. And this shall be the priest's due from the people, from them that offer a sacrifice, whether it be ox or sheep. And they shall give unto the priest the shoulder and the two cheeks and the maw. The first fruit also of thy corn, of thy wine, of thy oil, and the first of the fleece of thy sheep shalt thou give him. The Lord thy God hath chosen him out of all thy tribes to stand to minister in the name of the Lord, him and his sons forever. And if a Levite come from any of thy gates out of all Israel, where he sojourned, and come with all the desire of his mind into the place of the Lord shall choose, then he shall minister in the name of the Lord his God, as all his brethren the Levites do, which stand there before the Lord. They shall have like portions to eat, beside that which cometh of the sale of his patrimony.
First fruits were due to the sanctuary, Exodus 23:19.
Exodus 23:19. The first of the first fruits of thy land thou shalt bring into the house of the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not see the kid in his mother's milk.
Right, there's a portion which is perpetually due unto Aaron and his descendants. We're told this, and it's described in a very comprehensive list, which we see in Numbers 18, 8 to 32.
By reason of the anointing, and to thy sons by an ordinance forever. This shall be thine of the most holy things, reserved from the fire, every oblation of theirs, every meat offering of theirs, and every sin offering of theirs, and every trespass offering of theirs, which they shall render unto me, shall be most holy for thee and for thy sons. In the most holy place shalt thou eat it, every male shall eat it, it shall be holy unto thee. And this is thine, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings of the children of Israel, I have given them unto thee, and to thy sons, and to thy daughters with thee. By a statute forever, every one that is clean in my house shall eat of it. All the best of the oil, and all the best of the wine, and of the wheat, and the first fruits of them which they shall offer unto the Lord, them have I given thee. And whatsoever is first ripe in the land, which they shall bring unto the Lord, shall be thine. Every one that is clean in thy house shall eat of it. Everything devoted in Israel shall be thine. Everything that openeth the matrix and all flesh, which they bring unto the Lord, whether it be of men or beasts, shall be thine. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man shalt thou surely redeem, and the firstling of unclean beasts shalt thou redeem. And those that are to be redeemed from a month old shalt thou redeem, according to thine estimation, for the money of 5 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. For the firstling of a cow, or the firstling of a sheep, or the firstling of a goat, thou shalt not redeem. They are holy. Thou shalt sprinkle their blood upon the altar, and shalt burn their fat for an offering made by fire, for a sweet savor unto the Lord. And the flesh of them shall be thine, as the wave breast and as the right shoulder are thine. All the heave offerings of the holy things, which the children of Israel offer unto the Lord, have I given thee, and thy sons and thy daughters with thee, by a statute forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord unto thee and to thy seed with thee. And the Lord spake unto Aaron, thou shalt have no inheritance in their land, neither shalt thou have any part among them. I am thy part and thine inheritance among the children of Israel. And behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance, for their service which they serve, even the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Neither must the children of Israel henceforth come nigh the tabernacle of the congregation, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they have no inheritance. But the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer as an heave offering unto the Lord, I have given to the Levites to inherit. Therefore I have said unto them, among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, thus speak unto the Levites, and say unto them, when ye take of the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then you shall offer up an heave offering for the Lord, even a tenth part of the tithe. And this your heave offering shall be reckoned unto you, as though it were the corn of the threshing floor, and as the fullness of the winepress. Thus ye also shall offer an heave offering unto the Lord of all your tithes, which you receive of the children of Israel, and ye shall give thereof the Lord's heave offering to Aaron the priest. Out of all your gifts ye shall offer every heave offering of the Lord, of all the best thereof, even the hallowed part thereof, out of it. Therefore thou shalt say unto them, when ye have heaved the best thereof from it, then it shall be counted unto the Levites as the increase of the threshing floor, and as the increase of the winepress. And ye shall eat it in every place, ye and your households, for it is your reward for your service in the tabernacle of the congregation. And ye shall bear no sin by reason of it, when ye have heaved from it the best of it, neither shall ye pollute the holy things of the children of Israel, lest ye die.
The command, in fact, is that none appear empty-handed when you come into the sanctuary, Deuteronomy 16, 16 and 17.
16, verses 16 and 17. 3 times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, and in the feast of weeks, in the feast of tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee.
These first fruits, these offerings, are again taxes. These are revenues that are being taken from the people, and in fact, I want to point out something which should be relatively obvious, but these laws appear in the Mosaic Code. That means that the enforcement of them in their civil aspect falls to the magistrate. That's why these are addressed not only to members of the church, but to strangers in the land. They're being told, you have to leave your ground fallow too. You can't plant. You're renting a field. You can't do that. You can't have violations going on just because people want to ignore this law. Everyone has to do it, or there's going to be a civil enforcement. There has to be. A law without the possibility of enforcement is simply a suggestion. These are laws. Eighth, there were various tithes. And tithes are taxes which represent 10% of something. In this case, of total produce and cattle. Look at Deuteronomy 14, 22 to 29.
Deuteronomy 14, verses 22 through 29. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. And thou shalt eat before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithe of thy corn, of thy wine, and of thy oil, and the firstlings of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Lord thy God always. If the way be too long for thee so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Lord thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Lord thy God hath blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money, and bind up the money in thine hand, and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or for whatsoever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thy household. And the Levite that is within thy gates, thou shalt not forsake him, for he hath no part nor inheritance with thee. At the end of 3 years thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shalt lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow which are within thy gates shall come, and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest.
These tithes made provision for the redemption of some parts, but not for all. See Leviticus 27:30-33. And that also appears in Numbers 18:21-32. We're not going to read that again, but I just want to note that that provision is made there again. But let's look at Leviticus 27:30-33.
Leviticus 27:30-33. And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. And if a man will at all redeem all of his tithes, he shall add thereto his fifth part thereof. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even of whatsoever passeth under the rod, ten shall be holy unto the Lord. He shall not search whether it be good or bad, neither shall he change it. And if he change it at all, then both it and the change thereof shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed.
The interesting thing about these tithes is, if you don't want to tithe in the way commanded, there is an interesting way to get out. You can redeem it, some things at least, but you're going to pay more. You're going to add a fifth part more. That's not a voluntary contribution that requires you to give more in order to keep back the better part that you want. Right. While tithes, which belong to the Levites, were entrusted to their collection, which we see in the days of Nehemiah, again, Nehemiah 10, 33 to 40.
Nehemiah 10, verses 33 to 39. For the showbread, and for the continual meat offering, and for the continual burnt offering of the Sabbaths, of the new moons, for the set feasts, and for the holy things, and for the sin offerings to make an atonement for Israel, and for all the work of the house of our God. And we cast lots among the priests and Levites and the people, for the wood offering to bring it into the house of our God, after the houses of our fathers, at times appointed year by year, to burn up the altar of the Lord our God, as it is written in the law.
and to bring the first fruits of our ground, and the first fruits of all fruit of all trees, year by year, unto the house of the Lord. Also the firstborn of our sons and of our cattle, as it is written in the law, the firstlings of our herds of the flocks, to bring to the house of our God, unto the priests that minister in the house of our God, that we should bring the first fruits of our dough and offering and our offering, and the fruit of all manner of trees of wine and of oil, unto the priests of the chambers of the house of our God, and the tithes of our ground unto the Levites, that the same Levites might have the tithes in all the cities of our village. And the priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites. When the Levites take tithes, the Levites shall bring up the tithe of the tithes unto the house of our God, to the chambers, into the treasure house. For the children of Israel and the children of Levi shall bring the offerings of corn, of the new wine, and the oil unto the chambers, where are the vessels of the sanctuary, and the priests that minister, and the porters, and their singers, and we will not forsake the house of our God.
So we see in Nehemiah's day, when he's reestablishing the true religion, there are a lot of these tithes which are, these tithes are entrusted, they belong to the Levites, that is, to the church, in all of its functions. And yet its enforcement, to see it was collected and proper distribution was made, that enforcement was made in tandem with appointed officers, civil officers. Look at Nehemiah 13, verses 4 to 14.
Nehemiah 13, and before this, Eliashib the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied unto Tobiah. And he had prepared for him a great chamber, where aforetime they laid the meat offerings, the frankincense, and the vessels, and the tithes of the corn, the new wine, and the oil, which was commanded to be given to the Levites, and the singers, and the porters, and the offerings of the priests. But in all this time was I not at Jerusalem. When the 2 and 30th year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, came I unto the king, and after certain days obtained I leave of the king. And I came to Jerusalem, and understood of the evil that Elisha did for Tobiah, in preparing him a chamber in the courts of the house of God. And it grieved me sore. Therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. And then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers, and thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God, and the meat offering, and the frankincense. And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled every one to his field. Then contended I with the rulers, and said, Why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together, and set them in their place. Then brought all Judah the tithe of the corn, and the new wine, and the oil unto the treasuries. And I made treasurers over the treasuries, Shelemiah the priest, and Zadok the scribe, and of the Levites, Pedaiah, and next to him was Hanan the son of Zachor, the son of Mattaniah, for they were counted faithful, and their office was to distribute unto their brethren. Remember me, O God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof.
Nehemiah is a civil officer. He's not a priest. He's not an ecclesiastical officer. He is claiming that this is a good deed that he's done. What has he done? He has appointed civil officers to make sure the money gets to the Levites, and to make sure the Levites spend it the way it's supposed to be spent. Nehemiah is a godly magistrate. Now people resist a lot of this. And that brings up our ninth point. Samuel forewarned the people the excesses of kings that are granted to a rebellious people. 1 Samuel 8, 11 to 19.
1 Samuel 8, 11 through 19. And he said, This will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for themselves, for his chariots, to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint his captains over thousands, and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his background, and to reap his harvest, and to make his instruments of war, and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries, to be cooks, and to be bakers. And he will take your fields, and your vineyards, and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. And you will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards, and give them, and give to his officers and to his servants. And you will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses, and put them to his work. And you will take the tenth of your sheep, and ye shall be his servants. And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which ye shall have chosen you. And the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "Nay, but we will have a king over us."
We're told that kings would be excessive. They would be looking to tax everything. And yet, we see from the Bible that there were a number of things that even godly kings tax. And Paul tells us they have a right to that as God's ministers. Ungodly kings do not have respect, for example, to the poor, though. Look at
Amos 5:11. For as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and ye take from him burdens of wheat, ye have built houses of hewn stone, but ye shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but ye shall not drink wine of them.
Nor do they take care to see the legitimate tithes collected or secured for the purposes of true religion. Look at Malachi 3:6-12.
Malachi 3:6-12. For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, you're gone away from my ordinances, and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, Wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, Wherein have we robbed thee, in tithes and offerings? Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the window of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground. Neither shall your vine cast her fruit from before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts, and all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts.
So when godly kings are going to engage in all kinds of excesses, they're not going to have a care for the poor, and in fact they're going to neglect true religion. We're not talking about that. The examples I've given are cases where what is in view is the upkeep of the church, the establishing of true religion. Examples of godly kings concerned about true religion, whom we are told are doing the right thing. But these taxes that we've looked at, they're not all voluntary in the sense that you could or didn't have to pay them if you didn't want to. These taxes have to be paid somehow. You're either going to comply or you're not going to be in Israel, at the very least. Now, there are other things that the king can do, the magistrate can do with regard to taxes. We see, in fact, in the law, there were those who were not engaged in certain kinds of activities, such as agriculture. They're exempted from certain kinds of taxes, like tithes. Not all taxes apply to all people. The poll tax, the head tax, that didn't apply to everyone. The taxes are hitting different people in different ways. The taxes that they collected for the to put far from them the enemies were only levied on the wealthiest. The forced labor tax, the mas, was only apparently on strangers who dwelt in the land. But the fact is, everyone who lived in Israel had to contribute. King also had power, it appears, to grant tax exemptions to those performing some kind of great task which was perceived as a benefit to the society. Well, we see it in 1 Samuel 17:25.
1 Samuel 17:25. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel has he come up. And it shall be, if the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel."
Saul says, whoever kills this Goliath, not only am I going to enrich him, but his father's house will be free. And what he means is tax-free. Remember all those houses in Israel. All those houses in Israel, in different tribes. Depending on your tribe, you had 1 month assigned where you were going to be contributing to the upkeep of the king's house. The king and his house. Saul is granting tax exemption to that family. Whichever family produces a victor over Goliath. It's also likely it was common practice among kings to grant general tax exemptions for occasions of state, like we see in Esther 2:18.
Then the king made a great feast unto all the princes and his servants, even Esther's feast. And he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king.
So in the case of a royal wedding, giving gifts is all well within the right of the magistrate. The last thing to consider, 11th, is it may well be the king's treasuries were also allowed to be filled with goods of those who, through the commission of capital crimes in particular, forfeited their property in consequence. Look at 1 Kings 21:1-16.
1 Kings 21:1-16. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, "Give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house. And I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seems good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money." And Naboth said unto Ahab, "The Lord forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my father unto thee." And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, "I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers." And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. But Jezebel his wife came to him and said unto him, "Why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread?" And he said unto her, "Because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite and said unto him, Give me thy vineyard for money, or else if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it." And he answered, "I will not give thee my vineyard." And Jezebel's wife said unto him, "Dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite." And she wrote letters to Ahab in Ahab's name, and sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in the city, dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters, saying, "Proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, sons of Belial, before him to bear witness against him, saying, Thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him that he may die. And the men of the city, even the elders of the nobles who were the inhabitants of the city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them, and as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them. They proclaimed a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and sat before him. And the men of Belial witnessed against him, even as Naboth
in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him with stones, that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. And it came to pass when Jezebel heard that Naboth was stoned and was dead, Jezebel said to Ahab, Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give thee for money, for Naboth is not alive but dead. And it came to pass when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab rose up to go down to the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite to take possession of it.
I'm not saying that the case is an equitable one, but when in fact Elijah comes to him and makes accusation to him, here's what he doesn't say. He does not say what you did was in fact wrong in taking possession of someone who's committed a capital crime. He first accuses him of murder and then taking possession. There's no implication here that had it not been an unjust taking away of his life, there's no implication that he would have done anything wrong in taking possession. So it may well be that in Israel, one way kings enrich themselves, magistrates enrich themselves, was in fact through forfeiture due to commission of capital crimes. In all of this, what I want to point out again, and leave with this, and we'll move on next week, hopefully on a different topic than church establishments, but I just want to point out that these taxes were not what people today would consider voluntary contributions. These were, in fact, enforced by laws, enforced with the power of the magistrate, and the magistrate's shadow, even where there aren't accounts of enforcement, the magistrate's shadow shows up. They're behind them, making sure that they're being carried out. The freedom is only perceived to those who embrace the true religion and see the justness in it. Of course, everyone else is going to find this unjust. But you don't have to live in Israel. In fact, if you don't want to abide by the laws, you're better off somewhere else. People who live in Israel because they want to live in Israel are concerned to see the advancement of the kingdom of God in their nation. And those people shouldn't have a problem with seeing that there is a just enforcement. In fact, they may see some value in having a little bit of buffer when it comes to financial matters between themselves and the established church in the person of a righteous and godly magistrate.